Hey, Derek.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's good, man. How was the draft?
It looked good on TV.
Nah, it was great.
You bitch.
You son of a bitch. So, unfortunately, Derek was not able to join the Section 328 contingent out in beautiful, sunny, delightfully smelling, yet horribly sensitive Vancouver. We'll get to that a little bit later. But, Derek, I'd like to get from someone who was sitting at home watching the draft. Can you tell me just what level of excitement you had when the Carolina Hurricanes finally got to pick at about 11 Eastern?
Oh, man. It was so funny because, like, leading up to the draft, we all get the speculation. And for once, we didn't have a lottery pick, so we didn't have the speculation of who's going to fall to us at 10 or 5 or whatever. And so all of it was, what trades are going to happen? PK Subban's going to get traded. So-and-so's going to get traded. And I can't wait. And I'm watching and I'm watching and I'm watching, and finally Bettman goes to the podium and says he has a trade to announce, and it's a swap of picks. And that deflated the only real excitement I had for that first round, because once it got to that point, it became pretty clear to me that the Canes weren't going to make a trade. Later on, I did get excited when we drafted Nick Suzuki. I was really happy he was there. It was a Nick or Ryan. I forget which of the Suzuki chaps it was. But
well, I tell you what, we've got the 328 correction department live on the line. Can we go to the correction department and could you chime in, please, sir?
I'm happy to report that it was Nick Suzuki who was selected. Vegas selected his brother Ryan back in 2017.
Folks, those are the dulcet tones of the one very, our very own Pat Clark, our behind the scenes, cheaters never win correction department, for when Derek's not correcting me for the, you know, my inability to use the English language, or as someone referred to me last week in Vancouver, speaking American, but again, we'll get to that story at the end of the podcast.
Hey, all right. So I got the right Suzuki, and so did the Canes, and I thought it was a really good pick at 28, but honestly, by that point in the night, with just not much happening other than Steve Yzerman going way off the board to take a German defenseman, the first round was incredibly underwhelming on TV. From that perspective, I would love to hear how it was in the building, in the Rogers Place Center barn building, whatever the hell they call it up in Vancouver. How was it for the three of you guys?
Well, it was great for us. And the reason it was so boring, Derek, was because we had learned earlier in the day that the NHL Players Association had not yet ratified this year's salary cap. So I think it'd be only fair to introduce the other voice on the line, the Section 328 legal and CBA expert. You may know him as Mr. Workrate. Mr. Workrate, can you tell us what were the implications of the GMs not knowing what the actual salary cap was going to be on the first night of the draft in Vancouver?
Well, as a fake lawyer, I can assuredly say that the unknown factor of the salary cap handcuffs most teams. We heard a rumor that Toronto was going hard on PK Subban.
Hard!
All day, all night.
Yes. But obviously, Toronto having issues with re-signing not only Mitch Marner, but several other restricted free agents, they had to kind of get an idea of what this cap was going to be at so that they could do the maneuvering that they would have to do eventually anyway. So with that number still up in the air, GMs were a little bit reluctant, especially since I think the rumor was going around that at least would be resolved by the following day, that on that first day of the draft, that teams were going to hold off and go, you know what, we're all still going to be here tomorrow. Let's wait and see what actually happens.
Yeah, and Saturday morning kind of kicked off with a little bit of a bang. All of a sudden, we are having Pat, Tom, and I are having breakfast at a place, I believe it was called EOB. It was phenomenal. Tom got a crazy poutine. I got a nice breakfast plate. Pat got diabetes. It was phenomenal. But then as we're heading back, all of our phones start lighting up. Patrick Marleau, now a Carolina Hurricane. That was the first of the two big trades of the day. You also mentioned Pernell Carl Subban, now a member of the New Jersey Devils. So kind of roundtable here amongst the four of us, and I think this might be our first four-legged podcast. We'll try to keep this table level, folks. What was the more surprising fact, that the Carolina Hurricanes basically just took on salary to buy a draft pick, or the fact that a Norris-winning defenseman has now been traded twice, and this time was traded for basically what amounts to a sack of magic beans?
I think we heard the rumors about Subban being traded starting even last year. $9.5 million cap hit that he has. Anytime you have a cap hit like that, there's going to be that possibility that players get moved around. But I think that was a little bit less surprising. I think it was a little bit more surprising, especially if we're dealing with narratives, that someone as cheap as Tom Dundon would actually take on salary to get no tangible asset outside of a first-round draft pick. So before, he had said that he would not spend money on nothing. Basically, he is spending money on nothing.
Derek?
I thought it was interesting to see that the first move of the day was that Marlowe trade, and you said that the Hurricanes acquired Patrick Marlowe, but it was really, we acquired his contract to do with it as we see fit in exchange for a first-round pick. I know we sent, I believe, a sixth Toronto's way, and a seventh came back, or vice versa. I know Pat is here to help keep us straight on all of that. But I like that. I mean, after all the you know, if it turns out that we buy out Marlowe's contract, somebody who knows the loopholes and the legalities better than I do shows that I think it worked out to like $3.83 million is what we're essentially paying to acquire a first round draft pick. So that does hurt the hashtag narrative that Tom brought up of Tom Dundon being cheap. And look, now the Canes have an extra first round pick. Here's the intrigue for me that will be resolved by Monday, is now we have an extra first round pick. Do we do what no NHL GM has successfully done in way, way, way too long and offer sheet somebody where a first round pick comes into play? I mean, the answer is obviously no, but for fun times, what if?
So, Pat, the question is to you, what if the Carolina Hurricanes decide to offer sheet, I don't know, let's just say, Mikko Rantanen.
Oof.
8 years, $13 million.
13, Mitch, sir.
Mitch Marner money. Hey, if Mitch Marner, hey, Toronto says Marner's worth it, so is Rantanen.
I know we've only been back in the triangle a few days, but what the heck's in the water inside the Beltline, Mike? Jeez.
It's brown and it's
water
dirty.
Than on your kids' toys? Since we were in Canada, there's no chance they make an offer sheet right now, only because I think if they were to do it, it'd be for a stealth for a middle tier guy, let's say a Kyle Connor out of Winnipeg, instead of the top flight player, mainly because it's going to be pretty tough to take on Marlowe's full cap hit of 6.25. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, as well as whatever Aho comes in at, and then a potential $13 million hit for Rantanen. I could see them taking on anywhere from between a $4 to $6 million cap hit based on the Calvin DeHaan trade, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Well, we'll absolutely get to that. Calvin DeHaan reunited with no one that we're aware of out in Chicago. And we will miss him here dearly. We'll talk about that deal. We'll talk about the draft. We'll talk about free agency. Hell, we'll talk about all sorts of stuff. We'll talk.
Sorry, Mike. The highest cap hit in NHL is Connor McDavid at 12.5. There are only four other guys that are at 11, and yet you want to throw out $13 million for Mikko Rantanen?
He's still on that Canadian money conversion.
Yeah, I mean, don't we pay? Yeah, don't we pay him in Canadian money? I mean, because that's like $8.5 million. Anyway, I am after this weekend at the draft, I am full on Team Chaos, and I want to watch this. I just want to watch it all burn. Hey, Pat.
Yes, sir.
Hit that damn X button.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of Cheaters Never Win. Still, somehow, a proud member of the Sports Channel 8 podcast family. My name's Mike. Tom, Pat, and Derek are all here this week via Skype. We're bringing you all of the latest from the Vancouver Draft, Prospects Camp, as well as our thoughts on free agency and more. So now, let's go back to the boys. That's it, folks. Welcome back to this week's episode of Cheaters Never Win, the Vancouver Didn't Kill Us edition, but Don Waddell may.
It did kill our first attempt at a podcast, though.
But the first 20-some minutes are there. The last 30 minutes are where the gold's at, really, in that podcast. So I blame me because I'm awful and may have been slightly.
I blame Trevor Linden.
Fuck Trevor Linden. Yeah.
Look out, Trevor Linden.
Look out, Trevor Linden. Oh, gosh. Stick around for that story, folks. It's good. It's good. Sarah Sivian was part of that story. Sean Leahy was part of that story. And Trevor Linden, part of that story. We mentioned it right before we went to the intro there, the Calvin DeHaan trade, which broke the collective hearts of Caniacs everywhere. As Sarah Sivian wrote in her Athletic article, you may understand the move, but you don't necessarily have to like the move. Calvin DeHaan, a third pairing defenseman, we were spending $4.5 million on, logjam of defense down in Charlotte, and the move was made for Calvin DeHaan to go off to Chicago for basically a backup goaltender that'll probably be the starting goaltender for the Charlotte Checkers when the season kicks off, and a potential third pair defenseman who has some offensive upside but doesn't know much. So Pat, as our resident hockey expert, what can you tell us about Forsberg and Forsling?
Anton Forsberg was actually a goalie I kind of had a bit of interest in, just to add some depth to the position, given that I figured McElhinney is gone, and by all reports that we've heard, he's going to get at least a 2-year deal somewhere else. Mrazek being the wild card that he is, if he weren't to sign back and say we did one of the unspeakable things and signed a goalie that will just, you know, make everyone cringe, like a Mike Smith or a Semyon Varlamov. Having a at least experienced 26-year-old pro in net to kind of platoon in that third spot. He's a guy that would clear waivers. Next year will be the last year that Ned is waivers exempt, so you could have a nice little rotation going. Forsling is he's better than Trevor Carrick, but still the sixth or seventh best D on the roster at any given time.
I mean, so at this point, the third pair defense is going to be TVR when he gets back, and then either Hayden Fleury or Jake Bean, which is not a bad place to be, a stay-at-home defenseman or an offensively-minded defenseman who might be able to power play quarterback a power play, sitting there on an entry-level deal playing in your bottom pair versus a guy who's $4.5 million. The way the league's sitting up right now, I don't know if it's possible to have, you know, more than, you know, what do we have, $7-8 million in our bottom pair on defense? I just don't know if that works in today's National Hockey League.
I mean, once upon a time, I actually wrote that outside of your top three defenders, if you're paying someone else more than $2 million, you're going to be in cap trouble. And I don't think we saw it prior to the Marleau deal, but I can foresee there have been other cap implications that hindered them from doing any other transactions.
All right, so who has a microphone that's rubbing against their face or some other body part? Whoever it was, it stopped, and it was glorious. Folks, we're doing this podcast via Skype because we have to. Life and jobs and things and such are all in the way. So Derek, I ask you, as noted beer lover and a guy who actually got to spend some quality time with Calvin DeHaan before the season started, in the media day. Kind of, what was your initial reaction to this? And as someone who's kind of fond of the guy, do you see the can you get past kind of the initial shock that was this move?
Yeah, I mean, I think I shared a lot of our sentiments when I saw the news of the trade, and for the first time in a while, the Hurricanes were part of a trade where the best player in that trade was leaving Carolina. So I was a little bit surprised by that. But then when I took some time to digest it, I'm like, okay, from a cap standpoint, I get it. But if you just look at this trade as one piece, I think it's easy to say that we lost this trade. But is this setting up for something better? Whether it's another trade, a free agent signing, re-signing players like Mrazek or Williams, and now that we've acquired the Marleau cap hit, do we, you know, need to use that cap space between that and the Aho deal? What's the bigger picture? There's also the other aspect that I think Tom might want to go into a little bit more of. You know, DeHaan had surgery this offseason. Is he going to be the same player? And is it worth a $4.5 million risk for a guy who may not be the same anymore? I don't know. There's also the optics of, we just signed him to a 4-year deal last offseason, and then we traded him less than a year later. How much does that play into potential free agents coming here? You know, I don't know. So all in all, I didn't love this trade just looking at this one deal, but I'm open to seeing the bigger picture that GM Voltron has in store for us.
Yeah, and it's difficult to pin down how exactly Calvin DeHaan's going to come back this next season. Supposedly, he said that he's going to be ready for camp, which is a lot better expectation than was discussed when he initially got his surgery. The shoulder that he got the surgery on is not the same shoulder he had surgery on the previous season, which took him out most of the Islanders, the last year of his Islanders contract, and allowed him to kind of be on the market when we picked him up. So, but yeah, what you basically have right now is, in at least in our case, a third pairing defenseman. He could be a second pairing defenseman on another team, but just the way that we're stacked right now, he is a third pairing defenseman, making $4.5 million for the next three seasons with two surgically repaired shoulders.
That is an uninsurable contract also at this point. So that, whichever team is carrying him. Go ahead, Tom.
No, that was the next point I was just about to make, that this there are contracts. I think the Clarkson deal, you know, a lot of these contracts that people go on long-term injured reserve, they end up getting written off by insurance because of the way that contracts are structured, so that the team that actually acquires them, like, it's like, oh, they're paying $7 million a year. Not really, because they have a injury that is taking them completely out, so insurance covers that. This isn't the type of injury that is going to be covered by insurance. So if Calvin DeHaan, for some reason, can't lift his hands above his head 2 years from now, we're on the hook through every single dollar that's in that contract. So trading that contract now, while it still has a tiny little bit of value, looks a lot better than trying to trade it a year from now if he doesn't come back 100% from this injury, and then you're looking to dump him wherever you can in more of a Chicago-like deal in the other direction, where you're putting a very strong sweetener in order to have somebody take it off your hands.
So I ask you, speaking of strong sweeteners, Patrick Marleau. Probably, here's my biggest question the Carolina Hurricanes have as we sit here on the 26th of June, less than a week away from free agency. Justin Williams, who is the former, at this point, captain of the Carolina Hurricanes, has not committed to retiring, re-signing with a club, or signing elsewhere. We now have Patrick Marleau, who, in theory, could play for this Carolina, could pay for this Carolina Hurricanes team, because he is under contract, and the Carolina Hurricanes could ask him to play here. If he chose to sit out, he would be basically forfeiting his last $6 million, which I'm sure would do nothing but, you know, enhance the narratives. So I ask you this. As an old man veteran on this team, does Patrick Marleau, in the absence of Justin Williams, fill a role none of us thought we had, albeit an expensive role? Does he fill that role come September when camp opens?
Absolutely. He becomes the greatest number 12 in franchise history.
Yes, and if you go to the Carolina Hurricanes website, Pat pointed this out to me, Patrick Marleau currently sporting the number 12 and immediately becomes the greatest number 12 in Carolina Hurricanes history. I don't remember who wore it before him, but he is the greatest of all time.
But in all seriousness, I'm partially serious about that statement.
Wait, we do seriousness on this podcast?
That's kind of my gimmick. It doesn't go over well with everybody, but he could fill that role. I don't think he would do it to the same degree that Williams did, just because he doesn't have a rapport with Brenda Moore. He would just be a respected guy in the room. So he could fill a void.
He's also a guy chasing a cup, though, right?
He is. And in the most likely scenario that Carolina buys him out and he resigns in San Jose, is he any better off playing there hockey-wise than he is playing in Carolina? I'm not sure he is.
I think
it's a coin flip.
I mean, he's going to be without Jonas Donskoy. Good chance he's without Joe Pavelski.
And Gus Nyquist.
Gus Nyquist.
This was the name I thought. I just went to Hockey Reference since I had time to kill to look it up. The previous player to wear number 12 for Carolina before Eric Staal was anybody?
I cheated because I looked it up too.
I didn't recognize that name you put in the middle.
Pat?
Oh, I got to abstain. I know the answer.
Okay. Craig McDonald.
Craigers.
So I was looking through some headshots. And I think there's a fun future online game of, can you name this former Hurricane based on their old headshot? And I'm pretty sure we could get maybe a 20% conversion rate on successful answers.
Yeah, I mean, real quick, somebody, give me a headshot of Curtis LeCision and pick him out of a lineup.
Also, give me a headshot of Morgan Geeky more than 14 months ago, and I wouldn't recognize him.
Yeah, that young man has seen things. Mike Vellucci showed him something.
The bottom of the championship cup?
Whatever that young man has seen, I don't want to see it.
Yeah. So
This is the longest headshot discussion that's ever been had in the last 5 years for that Tom Wilson being mentioned.
Oh, gracious. Okay, so we're going to move this podcast along. We're going to kind of power through this one tonight, folks, give you about a 30-40 minute podcast. That means it'll be 50 easily. So the Carolina Hurricanes, let's move away from kind of the free agency and some of those things, and I'm going to ask for a couple of free agency predictions before the end of the podcast. But talk to me a little bit about some of the draft picks. Who are you most excited about? I know personally, I think I'm most excited for the Reese kid. Everybody seems to feel like he is one of those mid-round steals that could really light it up given a few years to go. But, you know, after we've all had a chance to do, 4 or 5 days of research on the guys who we did pick up in the draft, anybody who just jumps out to you, let's call this the Julian Gauthier Award, the guy we didn't pick first that we had high hopes for, that it's definitely at least going to be a couple of years before we see him.
All right, I'll throw it out there. Peter Kochikov, mainly because Keanu Reeves could immediately play him as a goalie in a hockey movie. I don't care what he does in the uniform, but that reason alone.
My pick, if we're going right now, is Dominik Vintsoor. Fensore.
Dominic Fensore. The guy only slightly larger than Caulfield.
Boppity boopy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm digging the concept of a 5'7", 151-pound defenseman. This is a new NHL. Dude is fast, apparently, from what I've been hearing at the prospect training camp.
Well, and here's the thing, too. He played on that U.S. national development team where I believe 17 of the 18 skaters were drafted for the first time in history. There was only one free agent off the U.S. national development team who did not get drafted. So, I feel bad for that kid, and B, I should probably have done some pre-show research and know his name. USA Hockey just absolutely taking over. First time ever that there were more Americans drafted in the first round than Canadians ever. Suck it, Canada.
So I guess just to not repeat, I'm going to go with Honka for a few reasons. One, Corey Pronman. Who I trust way more than I probably should, considering I don't know any better or worse. He likes his game a lot. Also, Honk is just fun to say. So I'm going to go with Honka.
I think it got me my most hated tweet of the night the other night.
Which was,
I mentioned how the Carolina Hurricanes had a Honka burn in love for that draft pick.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that was pretty much the reaction.
Yeah. It was, sir, this is a Wendy's.
It was just one word responses from half my timeline, so.
Which is always fun. So, folks, if you guys aren't taking part, Carolina Hurricanes development camp is actually this week over at the PNC Arena. Go over to CarolinaHurricanes.com, and they have the full schedules there. Everything finishes up Saturday with Summerfest, where they have a 3-on-3 red versus white scrimmage. You'll be able to see the likes of Suzuki and Reese and Honka and a few other folks that are over there. Most of this year's draft picks were able to make it, plus some of yet last year's draft picks of record. Is Luke Henman there? Has anybody seen Luke Henman, or has he been standing sideways the entire time?
I think a gentle breeze brought him into town from LaGuardia.
He was, you couldn't see him. He was behind a grain of rice. Boom, roasted.
Luke Henman is a slight young man. I have no room to talk. I am not a slight or young man. So go out there. Definitely check it out. Saturday is going to be a whole lot of fun. So let's fast forward a little bit to Saturday, guys. Someone was taking bets and was saying that Saturday, just before the red and white game, the Carolina Hurricanes were going to announce that they had signed a contract with restricted free agent Sebastian Aho. So before we get to July 1st and free agency, let's talk a little bit about Sebastian Aho. A week ago, we were all excited. Then Thursday, Friday came, and supposedly we were bazillions of dollars away, and Tom Dundon was cheap again. And now all of a sudden we're hearing that the teams are getting close, and the agent wants a 5-year deal. The Canes want an 8-year deal. So when the Carolina Hurricanes announced the Aho contract on Saturday, what is the contract and who's most pissed off by it? Start with Tom.
I'm going to say 8.75 by 7, and Mitch Marner's the most pissed off about it, or Mitch Marner's father,
Paul.
Well, yes, if Drager?
Yeah, I was going to say, if Paul's upset, isn't Drager upset by association?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pat?
5 years.
So the player got what he
$9.125 million per.
Ooh, so you are talking 5 years, $45.5 million.
That's correct.
That doesn't upset me.
And the person most upset may be Braden Point, because that might drive down his number. Because I think Aho and Point share the same agent, and I think Point is actually looking for that 8-year deal. And I'm just curious what that does to change negotiations with Tampa.
It's an interesting point. I like that. Derek, beat Tom. I mean, right. Be Pat.
So I think the deal is going to be, I think it's going to go 7 years. I like the 9-1 number. You know what? Screw it. I'll do it for the, I'll rep our city. 7 years at 919.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, that's a nice little marketing thing you did there, Derek.
Yeah, see?
You should consider a job in marketing or media of some sort. You seem to have a knack for it. unfortunately, the answer that you all have given is wrong. The correct answer is they will sign an 8-year, $10.5 million $10.5 million contract for a total of $84 million. And then all of Raleigh will lose their mind when we have another lockout. So,
and then what percentage of that is John Cain going to ask for?
Let's see, $1.9 billion minus 51%.
Yeah. But then Tom Dundon's going to come back and say, you know what, in your guys' offer sheet, you guys didn't put in the right numbers or something, so I want all of my money back. Anyway.
While we're kind of spitballing some stuff here, one of the things that the three of you guys experienced that I, while sitting at home watching the draft, did not get to experience was apparently the three of you, or were I a betting man, Mike, insulted all of Canada and were nearly in a pugilistic endeavor with some Canadians. I need to hear this story because it's been damn near a week and I haven't heard it.
Okay, can I set up the story a little bit first?
Oh, actually, you know what? Can we go to the Fathom Realty guest line for this story, and invite on our special guest?
This is Don Meyer with Fathom Realty, official realtor of Section 328. You can find me at becauseitshome.com. I am as passionate about helping you make your next move as I am about the Carolina Hurricanes. On average, homes sold by my firm sell 78 days quicker than other homes on the MLS, getting money in your pocket sooner. Buyers also get exclusive strategic representation in the seller's market. Contact me at becauseitshome.com to learn more.
All right, so Thursday night prior to night one of the draft, we headed to the Athletics event to honor Jason Botchford, and there was a good 700-800 people deep there. Okay. And throughout the evening, they had a number of different things happening on stage. They had a couple stand-up comedians who, well, from our spot right up at the bar, we couldn't hear a damn thing, but the crowd seemed to be enjoying it. There was a live band and a couple panels. And off to our side, there was a silent auction table where yours truly was fortunate enough to walk home with a Larry Walker autographed Team Canada, the World Cup of Baseball jersey. Do I have that right, Tom?
That is correct.
And might I add, Tom was an excellent model for this jersey.
Oh, I look sexy in it.
So to close the evening, there was a panel with the big names. There was your Pierre LeBruns, your Bob McKenzie's, your James Myrtles? And they were getting softball questions to no end that any non-athletic person could hit out of the park. And I lean over to Mike and say, are these people real? Are they just kind of chicken shit? Are they going to ask a real question? And I knew what I was doing. I was stirring him up. So,
alcohol may have been involved.
No, I would have done it sober. I did not.
I absolutely would have done this sober.
True.
So, sure enough, just the slightest of nudge, and Mike had sort of the stage. And I'll let him take the story from here.
Well, right. So as we were standing in the back, and I'm going to, you know, drop a few names here. We were talking with friend of the podcast, Sean Leahy from
Let me get that one for you.
Thank you. From NBC Sports Pro Hockey Talk, and having a good time. And Pat, I remember specifically, Pat said, "Are these guys intentionally trying to do a bad podcast?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, Pat just hit it right on the head." As I'm walking up to the man with the microphone, who is probably 30, 40 feet away from us, making our way through a bunch of people, I'm trying to think of my question, and I was like, you know what? I got it. So I get up there, and the guy goes, you know, who are you, where are you from? I said, hey, I'm Mike, I'm from Carolina. He goes, really? You came here all the way from Raleigh? And I said, yep, yeah, absolutely. We there's a group of us here. Came here to see the draft. And he goes, oh, that's great. We love it. So the guy goes, hey, I got a question here. Mike came all the way from Raleigh. He hands me the mic, and I said, as I'm beginning to ask the, as I'm preparing to ask my question, Pierre LeBrun, who was moderating the panel at this point, said, oh, by the way, we're running out of time, so this is going to be the last question of the evening. At that point, a smart man might have just kind of bailed out and let somebody ask another softball Canadian-focused question. But I was already ramped up and couldn't. I don't know if you guys know this about me. I can't not cut a promo. So I went on with it, and I said, okay, first and foremost, Mr. Myrtle, I'd like to say thank you for bringing the Athletic to Carolina, and specifically thank you for Sarah Sivian. Everything she has done has been phenomenal, and we really appreciate the Athletic and everything Sarah has done for us this year. Very polite, nice round of applause. I could see Sarah smiling from her VIP booth upstairs. And then I said, okay, now with that out of the way, last year, about this time, a certain Toronto-based writer, I believe his name was Steve, who happens to work for the local Toronto Fish Wrap, called the Carolina Hurricanes, and I quote, a gong show. Now, 12 months later, the Carolina Hurricanes made their way to the Eastern Conference Finals and positioned themselves really well to be a good team for the next few years. So I ask you this. With what has happened, I'd like to get your opinion on where you think the Carolina Hurricanes are going to be this time next year. And can we all agree, I'm going to pause here, remember, we are all in Vancouver. I said, can we all agree that when all said and done, Andrei Svechnikov is going to have a much more successful career than Elias Pettersson? Boo! The boos rained down. It was some of the best feeling heat I have ever gotten, and it was so great, and I loved every second of it. And for those of you who may know or may have read some of Jason Botchford's stuff, Botchford was a known needler, and one of his biggest things that he loved to needle was the fact of Pettersson was chosen at 5, Svechnikov was chosen at 2, and Pettersson was and is going to be the better player. So I was kind of just playing a little bit off kind of the whole, you know, kind of the whole Botchford thing. So then LeBrun looks at me and goes, hey, you might want to calm down there a little bit, man. The Carolina Hurricanes might want to focus on actually winning a game in the Eastern Conference Finals before you crown yourself champions next year, which was the exact appropriate response because the crowd's loving it. So I take a few steps to the stage, and I'm like, you want to go? You want to fight? And I kind of waved at him, gave him a big thumbs up, and said, thanks, everybody, and I kind of walked away. And I thought it was great. And then I had like two or three people come up to me and said, that was really funny, man. That was awesome. And, you know, we're just back there and we're talking and we're watching Tom model this beautiful Canadian jersey, and it's amazing. So then like 2 minutes later, I get a forearm shiver to just the lower back of my neck. And I was like, oh, man, somebody bumped into me. And as I look, I see a Trevor Linden jersey walking away from me. And I was like, oh, man, that guy just bumped into me. Oh, well. But then he looks back at me and gives me the look. You know the look? Pat, you saw the look?
I saw the look.
Yeah, saw the look. That he looked at me like, you're an asshole, I'm going to kill you. I'm like, okay, cool. So we go, and we stand in there and talking, and the guy's walking back and just staring me down like nobody's business. And I'm like, well, I guess I got to talk to this guy. So I step up to the guy, and I was like, hey, man, I just want to say, that was a really good check. And he kind of looked at me, and I was like, no, when you hit me in the back, it was a good check. And he goes, what are you talking about? I don't speak American. And I responded, you know, politely as I could. I barely speak English, so, you know, we're both lucky here. I said, so the question is, when you're leaving, should I check you now in the front, or should I legally check you from behind? I'm not sure how you guys do it in Canada. And he then informed me that what I had done by asking a Carolina Hurricanes question and down-talking Elias Pettersson was the most disrespectful thing he had ever seen at the wake for a dead man. I repeat, a wake for a dead man where there had been two stand-up comedians and a band who did a bunch of really bad covers. Actually, there were good covers of a bunch of tragically hip songs. And everybody had been making jokes and getting hammered all night long. And I was like, dude, I said, if I offended you, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was it. He goes, it was the last question, man. Somebody should ask about Jason. And I was like, that's on them, not on me. And I was like, hey, man, I'm sorry if I offended you. I hope you have a great night. And he goes, I'll see you outside. I'm like, okay, it's not the first time someone said they would see me outside, and then I never saw them again. Sure enough, we wait 5 minutes, we walk outside, we're going to go see another one of our good friends who just happens to write coverage for the University of North Dakota, the one, the only Scotty Waz. Tom or Pat, will you guys pick that one up for me? Thank you. So we're off on our way to go see Scotty Waz, and as we're about half a block down, I say, Tom, do me a favor, will you check my six and see if Trevor Linden's following us? And Tom looks around and goes, yep, sure enough, and he's got a buddy with him. So I was like, we walked the block, turned the corner, walked another block. They're still following us. So I stopped and I was like, all right, guys, what are we doing? Are we going full West Side Story? You know, are we having a dance break? What are we doing? And the guy's like, I just want to know what you meant. And I was like, I told you what I meant. I meant no disrespect. So anyway, about 5 minutes later, we had finally talked this guy down off of his perch. And he among like two other people, said it was the most disrespectful thing anyone had ever done to Canada. While four other bloggers had come up to us and said, thank you, God, for finally injecting a little bit of fun into the evening. So that was our time that I said Andrei Svechnikov was going to have a better career than Elias Pettersson. And I did the most disrespectful thing that had ever been done on Canadian soil and almost got my ass kicked for it. The good news is he didn't throw a punch, because if he had, we had four Irish guys with us who might have had a little bit of alcohol in them. Never go 2-on-4 with four Irish guys. Irish. No, we're Irish. We had me, Pat Clark, Tom Edwards, who is Irish by association, and Sean Leahy, who is Irish by Long Island. So, I mean, come on. You don't want none of that. And Trevor Linden, if you're listening, come at me, bro.
So, two things before we get too far into that. One, I'm a quarter Irish. Thank you. Two was the important tweet that I had afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Because Sarah had mentioned, you know, what was going on there, because we kind of vaguely mentioned something on Twitter. And there was a couple of mentions over what we had. And I just simply said, guys, I knew it felt chilly, but I didn't think we'd see snowflakes in Vancouver tonight. I was wearing a jersey that said Canada literally across my boobs.
And we were one of seven people who had actually bid and donated to the Botchford Family Foundation by winning this jersey. We were at one point, we were the high bidders on three of the seven articles to support the family. Two of them we lost. One of them, thankfully, Pat won, because now Larry Walker is saved and back in Raleigh where he belongs. Former Carolina Mudcat great, Larry Walker.
And that jersey may be making a ceremonial appearance at Coors Field next week. So
I love it.
Gonna do a little road trip with it. But what was funny to me is, little did I know, there must have been scouts or GMs watching that interaction on the street, because they all played a little chicken. And then sure enough, on the draft floor the next night, every single team played chicken, because, God, was that first night boring.
So boring. Well, and I tell you what, I'll even throw this out there. We were told, somebody stopped me the next day and said, hey, you remember me? I was there that night. And I was like, yeah, I remember me. I was good talking to you. He goes, did you hear LeBron on TSN today? And I was like, no. He goes, yeah, he did a radio drop where he was afraid you actually weren't kidding when you took a couple steps to the stage and asked him if he wanted to go. For the record, Pierre LeBrun, I know you're a big listener of the Cheaters Never Win podcast. I would never, ever attack you like that, unless, of course, we were wearing singlets, we were thoroughly lubed up, and a steel cage were involved. Now, if that happens, I'm game. Let's go, boy. Let's go. I don't know where we go from here, Derek. I mean, normally we would have cheat mail questions to go from here, and I know we promised to kind of keep this short. So I'm gonna ask like maybe one final question, and then we'll get to a beer review, because I know we all got places we got to go and things we got to do this evening. So, one final question: July 1st, what is the one impact move the Carolina Hurricanes will make on July 1st that will ensure that they make another run to the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I don't want them to make a move on July 1st. I want them to... I want them to re-sign Mrazek. I want Williams to come back. But we need something else forward. And I don't know what that something else is, but I know that free agency is just a great way to overpay for players. So I don't know that I want it. But I'm also Team Chaos. And even though you mentioned $13 million for Mikko Rantanen, and that's absurd, and Pat has made us well aware that Colorado has cap space to match just about any offer, San Jose doesn't. And I wonder if there's something with San Jose, and maybe we eat some of Marlowe's contract.
I like where this is heading.
And maybe we get, you know, I forget who, again, who knows hockey better than I do, that threw something out there of, is there some kind of goofy trade we can work out with San Jose that brings Tomas Hertl this way? Because if there's a way to make that work, give me that all damn day. So that's what I'm hoping for, is some kind of trade like that with San Jose, where they get Marlowe back, they pay him essentially peanuts, and we take something back from San Jose that gives them the cap space to re-sign Pavelski.
I like it. Pat, that's sheet mail to you. What do you got?
Cam Talbot signs a 2-year contract after Peter Mrazek re-signs prior to July 1. There's your 1-2 battery.
Talbot and Mrazek to start the season with Forsberg and Nedeljkovic down in Charlotte, with Jeremy Helvig starting the season as the starting goaltender for the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. Huh. I don't hate it. Tom, what do you got?
If you're talking about July 1st, the best thing that the Canes can do is sit there and watch as some team gives Tyler Myers 7 years and like $8 million, and Jake Gardner gets 7 years and $8 million, and teams put themselves into salary cap hell, and we spend our money wisely and wait to take advantage of these teams while still keeping our core in.
I like it. My take on this is the Carolina Hurricanes announced the re-signing of Peter Mrazek at 11:50 a.m. right before free agency starts. And then the Carolina Hurricanes' sole signing is going to be, as Derek said, a San Jose Shark, but it is going to be a depth signing for Jonas Donskoy. I don't hate the idea of Jonas Donskoy filling in one of those roles on our bottom six. I think he's a kid who's got some potential, got some future, and you know, could maybe do a little something around here. So that's my take. Jonas Donskoy and Peter Mrazek are going to save us all. Derek, what do you
yes.
think? What are you drinking tonight?
I have gone by the local Alphabet shop and I've procured. Well, I did this a while ago, but I have a bottle of Wild Turkey Rare Breed. You know, it's the off season. I need something a little stronger to get me through the days. So,
you know what? Actually, if you don't mind, Derek, I'm gonna bump you from your spot tonight. Tom,
Hold on, Mike. Do I have a choice?
You don't. Okay. Tom, could I get a belated Caesars review? And for those of you who don't know, Tom, please explain, what is a Caesar?
Okay, so one of the things, I ended up taking one of the pictures of where we were and on putting it on Facebook, because that's one of those things that you're supposed to do by law. And one of my Canadian friends chimes in and is like, have you had a Caesar yet? And I'm like, I have no idea what a Caesar is. They're like, gotta have a Caesar. I'm like, okay. So a Caesar, to the uninitiated, is pretty much similar to a Bloody Mary in the sense that it's tomato juice, vodka, clam juice.
There it is.
Worcestershire, hot sauce. They take a little celery salt around the rim of the glass, throw in celery stalk, and I think there was like a green bean in the first one that I had, like a pickled green bean. And it's the most kind of disgusting thing that you can think of, putting all these things together. God damn, was it good, though. So, and they serve them at the arena as well, at the Rogers Centre Arena Center, whatever.
And they didn't make them. They poured this out of a can.
It was a bottle.
Okay.
It was like an individual, like 12-ounce beer bottle type thing. And they threw in the Worcestershire and the hot sauce, because that's something that, yeah, I guess you'd want to adjust on your own. But they had you could go to an actual bar and, you know, get a nice looking one. But yeah, they had one that if you were short on time, you could just grab a bottle of the stuff and chug it if you wanted to. So that apparently is a thing. And I had several of them as I was walking around the concourse, and they were delicious.
So, folks, when you're going this weekend, after you've gone to the Carolina Hurricanes equipment sale Saturday morning, you've gone to Summerfest on Saturday afternoon, you have your date night with your significant other on Saturday night, Sunday morning you're going out to brunch, don't order a Bloody Mary. Look the waiter or the waitress right in the eye, your server, and say, "Excuse me, I'd like a Caesar." And you know what? I, as someone who made some Caesars with Tom back in our accommodations, I can tell you, the Caesar, damn right delicious. Something about clam juice, tomato juice, vodka, before 10 o'clock in the morning, that'll get your day off to a right start. Folks, this is going to be it for this week's episode of Cheaters Never Win. We thank you for joining us. I'd like to thank our special guest tonight, Mr. Workrate Tom Edwards, hockey savant, and the guy who played Pat Clark, and Derek, who does things.
Hey.
Yay. So until then, my name's Mike.
I'm Derek.
I'm Tom.
I'm Pat.
And we are Section 328. Until next time, we'll see y'all later. Bye.
Yeah.